Hello and welcome into another episode of Lessons in Product Management. I'm your host, John Fontenot, and today joining me, we have the pleasure to hear from Andrew Bowker, Senior PM at IBM and been in product for a while now, and saw one of his posts on LinkedIn that really pulled at my heartstrings about the problems that aspiring PMs are having today in their journey to product management. So I had to have him on the podcast and super glad that he joined. Well, welcome in, Andrew.
Hey, John. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So I know I gave a brief intro, but you've done several things. You've been a PM for a while. You started your own thing as well. So I'd love to hear kind of like your founder story, your path into product management. Kind of tell me more about yourself.
Yeah. Happy to. Origin story, right?
Yeah.
The two of those are related, by the way. So the stuff I built on the side and how I got into product management, which informs a lot of the way I do content, share content on social platforms today. But yeah, so quick backstory, because I know we want to get to the meat of the subject here, and I don't like boring people with too much backstory. But quick backstory is I have a non-traditional background, right? So I majored in mechanical engineering, hated it, went into nonprofit as soon as I graduated school, loved it. However, I've always had more of a for-profit mind. So I wanted to transition from a nonprofit like organizational operations role into more of a tech role. So that's when I started looking at what are my options in tech, right? Started looking at job descriptions. I saw a product manager job descriptions, and I thought to myself, well, that is exactly what I would like to do. You get to wear all the different hats, all the reasons we love product management, right? And it just seemed like a great fit for me. However, I started applying to every product management role I could find in my city, right? Probably 50 roles I applied to, and I didn't get a single call back from anyone. So that was discouraging to say the least, but at that time I had no clue how to find a job, especially a product management job, which is, I come to find out, a lot harder to get. So, ended up taking a customer success management job, tried to pivot into product, got sidetracked. Ended up going back to business school. But the reason I did that is because there was this product launch accelerator program at NC State, where I actually graduated from before, where you could take patents that were developed at the school by professors. And these patents were just dormant. So they're just sitting on the shelf with you're collecting dust, right? And the whole point of this program was to take those patents, repurpose them, and launch them as companies, launch them as products and businesses. So it was really cool. And that's where I started developing a lot of the product chops, so to speak. And then I just started from there, just launching some of my own products on the side, which is eventually what caught on, and how I ended up getting into the formal role itself.
That's so awesome. So I guess for context, around what time was that? Like what year?
Yeah. So transitioned back to business school in 2017.
Okay.
I started trying, my first application for a product manager was probably 2015.
Okay.
So there's a couple of years in between there where I was really floating in the darkness.
It sounds like our timelines are pretty similar. I think I started applying in 2016 and have a similar non-traditional background. I drank the Kool-Aid of, you know, go to school, get your degree and you can get a job, and moved across the country with no connections and found out that not to be the case. So I taught high school for a little bit, waited tables, and kind of like found my way into a contract role for like Intel Software Group, and felt immense imposter syndrome with all these technical people.
Yeah.
So I totally empathize with that. That's really cool. So 2015, you started applying. 2017, you're looking at these patents saying like, how can I develop a product or a company off of this? At that time, were you like, you've already had an interest in product because you were applying. Were you learning kind of product skill sets or processes that you applied to kind of the product building in that 2017 timeframe? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this was a lot of very heavily focused in that 2017 timeframe on customer discovery, problem discovery, trying to understand what the market needs are for specific technologies, and really how to take something that's a concept or a technology. Like patents are, you know, one of the funniest things about patents to me has always been that your idea doesn't actually have to work. It just has to have a cognitive understanding for how it could work, right? And so that's one of the reasons IBM leads the world in patents by, you know, hundreds of thousands per year, because we pump out patents left and right about ideas that could potentially come to fruition, and you just have to explain how it would get there, but not actually have it invented. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, fun quick tip for people interested in pumping out patents. But to answer your question, it was all through, you know, how do you take a technology and then find a gap in the market where you could take the core components of that technology, maybe augment it slightly and apply it in a way that actually is commercializable, solves a true need, and has, you know, business viability to it in terms of somebody would be willing to pay for above and beyond, you know, the solutions they have today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love how you started with customer discovery, because I think a lot of times aspiring PMs will jump right to solutioning and it's kind of that marketing dilemma of, do we have a push or a pull technology, right? And a lot of times it's, we're going to push this product on a new market because we have this leading edge technology or this cool idea. But you really have to find the pull of demand in the market. And I think you hit on that really well.
Yeah, absolutely. The big quote I remember from, you know, that time was, fall in love with the problem, not the solution.
Yep, absolutely. So without getting into the weeds too much, and maybe we can, doesn't matter. but when you went through that discovery process, I guess, like, what were some of those like aha moments, or like, do you recall those aha moments, like what you did when you uncovered them?
Yeah. You know, some of these aha moments are seem quite obvious in retrospect, but at the time they were like, wow, I would not have thought of this. Right. So if we're going to go into the story time here, I think, you know, one of the ideas that I worked on was we had this patent for a dissolvable paper. And it was made from soy, and the teacher or the professor created this, you know, ability to dissolve paper from, you know, what we write on and what we use into just a very small, essentially, once you apply water to it, it reduces its volume tremendously, right? And we thought about, all right, well, what are all the applications for this? And we thought about all sorts of things, right? We started with like cigarette butts, right? Like, you know, what is littering the planet that we could get rid of that's made from paper? And cigarette butts came to mind, where, you know, they're all over the place and we'd sure like them to go away. But one of the, you know, fatal flaws there is you have to smoke the cigarette. So you get saliva on the paper and, you know, you don't want a cigarette dissolving in your mouth, right? So poor user experience. So we ran into problems like that, right? And we started with a very wide web of applications, right? Pizza boxes, toilet paper, papers like from Harry Potter, like you send it to your friend and they drop water and it disappears, like fun stuff, right? So you have this extremely wide set of customers that you could potentially deal with. And it's all about like talking with those types of people and trying to narrow down into a subset of really promising problems and really promising ideas to move forward with. And the one, you know, the realization that we came to was actually wipes, right? One of the biggest problems in Europe is clogged waterways and pipeways because people flush paper towels and wipes that are down the toilet, right? So we went down this huge web of trying to understand what are all the, you know, governmental and organizational implications of flushing these, you know, objects down the toilet and causing major, you know, pipe damage. Plus, you know, that's a huge cost to the city, right? To the cities that have to fix these problems. And so one thing that I found out was your customer set could vary widely depending on your audience, right? So we went from a person smoking a cigarette or a person ordering pizza to a city who has to pay for, you know, backlogged pipes, right? And so that became our customer set that we focused on. And then it gets even deeper where you have to deal with, okay, well, who controls the manufacturing of all these things, of all these types of products? And it comes down to, like, really, there's four big manufacturers of all of the paper products in the world. Not like 100%, but like 80% of all those materials are supplied by four major companies, right?
Crazy.
So then you start thinking about how you partner with them and so on and so on. And so it's so deep. And before you can even, like, believe how deep it is, you just keep going down these rabbit holes and exploring them. So that was a big realization for me. It's like it seemingly never ends. So you have to pick up a stop point and continue down a path and prove out its viability before you get overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that even though it was like a technology driven initiative, it was still like not just, hey, let's go get rid of cigarette butts, but one, you anticipated second order effects of dissolving cigarettes in the mouth, which is a very bad user experience, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then you went and said, like, okay, what actual problems can we solve with this? And then what are the implications of trying to solve the problem and going down the rabbit hole? Which I think too often it's tempting to stay like happy path, surface level, when you really do have to dig in to figure out, like, what are all the things that implicate these decisions, which is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention, like, there's other things that come to light as you get to the end of these, you know, these rabbit holes, and you're like, okay, well, you know, one of the big things I learned was people aren't really willing to pay extra for green, so to speak, green products, right?
Right.
Like, we love to think that people want to save the planet and everybody's all in on it. But in reality, people are going to take the cheapest, best option that gets the job done, not necessarily the thing that's going to be best for the planet. And that's why a lot of eco-friendly businesses probably don't get off the ground as much as they'd like to.
Yeah, or stay very niche and small, going to, like, right, you know, boutique stores and shops and stuff.
Yeah, or there's some sort of donation element to it, like I forgot the name of it.
Tom's?
Well, Tom's for sure, right? Like, they donate a pair of shoes, but, like, there's this company on Instagram where it's like they save the sea turtles and you buy a bracelet for it, right? So, you know, okay, stuff like that, right? You pay $5 for a bracelet, costs 1 cent to make the bracelet, but you save the sea turtles. So there's like a human donation element to it.
Absolutely. Cool. So it seemed like, just looking at your LinkedIn, some of the founding work that you did on some of your side stuff was corollary with getting your opportunity to get into product management. And I'd love to hear, like, your path into product and how much the side projects you were working on contributed to that opportunity.
Yeah, I would say it was a direct contribution. So as I was working on these side projects, you know, obviously the one I just explained about the flushable wipes, but also started a couple of my own and with a team, where actually the university I was at, NC State, is one of the top for entrepreneurship competitions. And so, you know, that was a huge opportunity for me to prove out some ideas and see if they had legs. And we ended up winning one and got some funding for some prototyping. And that was just a great story to bring into my product interviews to say, like, hey, I have no product management experience on my resume, but look, I'm building products on the side. I'm getting, you know, really great feedback, and people are paying me with that. You know, that's how you know it's good feedback. And then I'm, you know, explaining all the process of how we're doing customer discovery, how we're prototyping the product, what problem we're solving, how we're doing it. And when you can get into the weeds with confidence in these interviews about past experience, whether you have the PM name on your resume or not, that speaks volumes in the interview. So, you know, I would venture to say that most of my interviews, as I was trying to get product management jobs, 80-90% of the time was spent on talking about my process for circumventing the, or for navigating these side projects, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then the other 20-10% was behavioral questions, just normal stuff like strengths, weaknesses, those kind of things.
Gotcha. And so, yeah. I guess as you've got in and you've been a PM for a while, now you're a senior product manager, so you're definitely growing in your career, becoming more experienced and senior, and looking back and saying, like, there's a lot of people who want to get into this role just like you and I did, right. But are struggling to to kind of overcome some of the same hurdles that we had to overcome of you don't have the PM title on your resume, you don't have quote unquote experience. I guess what's so hard about the role, and like, I guess, what are some of the systematic forces that are fighting against that demand for people to get in?
Okay, so I think what you're getting at is there's a high demand of people who want to become product managers, and yep. There might even be some supply available, but there seems to be this gate that keeps a lot of people out, is what you're getting at.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to pretend I know all the forces, because I don't. I can only explain what, you know, I've learned from other people, aspiring product managers that I've talked to, and their experience, right? So yes. I've talked to hundreds of aspiring product managers over the past year. And this is all through, you know, random, like LinkedIn relationships that I've created over the past 12 months or so. And, you know, what I can say is, it seems like I hate using this terminology, but like, it almost feels like there's a form of laziness in the way that we are identifying potential product managers. And I say we as in like companies that are hiring product managers, right?
Right.
The fastest, quickest path to understand if somebody's capable of doing the job is to see if they've done the job. And the fastest, quickest path to see if they've done the job is for you to just ask for their resume and look and see if product manager, the words product manager, show up on the resume.
Yep.
To me, I understand why recruiters and hiring managers would do it that way, but it's also extremely lazy, right? Because what we in effect are doing there, and now we're seeing the effects of it, you know, today, is you're barring people who have applicable experience. You know, things like customer discovery or managing stakeholders without having influence, or doing it through influence without having a leadership position. You know, other skills like prioritization, strategy skills, all those types of skills that we typically look for in product managers, people have those. But if they don't have the title, then they don't get a chance to tell that story.
Yep.
And so that to me is the big force behind why it's so difficult to get in. And I think where you're headed is, okay, well, there's probably a few companies that are working around that today, but the crux of what I posted, what you saw my post on LinkedIn is for those people who do have that applicable experience from other roles, what their user experience is they get into this pipeline, interview pipeline. They have one interview, perhaps with a hiring manager or a recruiter. And the recruiter says, you know what, your experience is good. I think you need to have more product experience. So we actually have an APM role. I recommend you APM, associate product manager. Yeah. I recommend you apply to the associate product manager role. Okay, I'll do that. So they'll go look and at the application for the associate product management role. And what they see on that application is this: you must not have more than 2 years of industry experience to be in this APM program, right? Because the companies want to reserve the APM program for students coming straight out of school, coming out of college or university. And that's so that they can keep their talent pipeline, you know, fresh. And so you have this person, I call it the forgotten pocket, where you have this person who's in this pocket where they're too experienced for the APM role that they supposedly should apply to, but they're not experienced enough for just a normal product management PM role.
Right.
So they're left out. They can't get in unless they have like an advocate somewhere for them.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because like most HR departments, we'll go in and like reshare these Forbes articles that say, oh, over the course of someone's career, they'll pivot roles 3 to 4 times. And it's like, so we can hold that in one hand, but on the other hand, they're like, but not to product.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know. What have you seen in terms of what's your synopsis in terms of why people are having such a hard time getting in?
Yeah, I did a bunch of research on this too, like talking to aspiring PMs and then talking to recruiters and hiring managers. And what I noticed is that it differed by company size. There are some smaller companies that don't have the budget to compete with larger companies for experienced talent because the demand for experienced product managers is so high that companies are fighting with their finances to acquire that talent. And, experienced professionals know that and use that to their advantage. And so there's a pocket of smaller software companies that will offer less experienced people or people who haven't held the title before. And the exchange for that is probably a below market rate salary.
Yeah, less salary. And the tr and where I think one thing to add to that is the trouble is you probably have somebody coming from another role who might be making more, in that role, and they'd have to take a pay cut to become a product manager, which is backwards as well.
I helped a lady in Maryland make the transition through like the early days of Path to Product, and that was her main concern. She was a senior business analyst, and she was making good money. And she's like, "I don't want to take a pay cut, but I really want to do product management." And fortunately, she found a PM role that they agreed to match her salary, so she didn't have to go down any. But like in title, she was no longer like a senior professional, right? And so it's kind of a weird thing where, yeah,
Everyone takes a step back.
it might be something you have to just swallow if you really want to get into product management that bad. Are you willing to take a pay cut? Are you willing to take a title downgrade? Because it's just so darn hard.
It really is. Yeah. And for those people who are in that position where it's like, should I take a pay cut or should I like go from senior business analyst to regular product manager? It may feel like you're taking a step back in your career, but what I always say every time we watch, basketball or football with my friends, ball don't lie, right? So, like if you get
Right.
into that position and you start kicking, kicking butt, taking names, then it's going to show and you should be on a pretty good path to promotion from there. And then, the other thing is, what do you want long term in your career? I truly believe product is a great like middle person role where you get to touch all fa like many facets of the business.
Yes.
So it's a great launching pad if you don't want to be in product forever to get into marketing, to get into development, management, whatever it happens to be. And that's one of the beautiful, parts of product, but there's no law out there that says you can't go do those things, any other way, right? Product's just one way of doing it. So, keep your head up is what I would say.
Absolutely. So from your standpoint, I think we have shared experiences of like, what are some of the factors that led to us getting our shot? So I have a feeling I know what part of your answer would be, but I want to give you the floor. What's some advice you would give to like aspiring product managers first, and then maybe turn the tables of what advice would we give to employers?
Great question. And so for the first part of that question, I'll make it simple. I have three pieces of advice for people who are trying to get into product management. And these three pieces of advice sound simple and easy. They are not. These are the things that I believe I'll actually were the ones that it's maybe 20% of the activities that you could be focusing on, all the different things that you could do as an aspiring product manager. Reading books, taking courses, going back to get your MBA, like whatever it happens to be, right? These are the 20% of things that you should focus on that actually produce the majority of your results. So let's just say the 20-80 rule, 80-20 rule. So it produces 80% of the results. All right, here's the three things. Number one, building relationships. Number two, building products. And number three, getting really good at interviewing. Right. Those are the three things that I think really move the needle. And there may be some wiggle room with all three of those. That's why I say it's 80% of the results, right? Some people might disagree. But what I'm saying is if you can build relationships and before you need them, right? You can get on someone's radar 6 months early, right? And nurture that relationship. What you're doing is you're building an advocate for you at that company. So narrow down your list to five, maybe 10 companies. And just focus on building relationships in those companies. And your whole point for doing that is to be the first person that comes to mind when a new role opens up, right? That's all you're doing. Most jobs come from weak ties. I saw this report recently on it was actually I think it was a LinkedIn report or some sort of Ivy League school published it, but it was most jobs come from weak ties, right? So I'm not saying you have to be best friends with these people that you're building relationships with. Form and maintain a weak tie, because that's what's going to really bring you some results. The next thing I say is building products. Obviously, that's how you and I might have done it. We built, you know, different products so that we had something to speak to in interviews. The reason I say to do that is because it shows you have a growth mindset. Interviewers are looking for that. So if they see that you're not just, you know, buzzing off in your time off, and that you're actually like doing something worthwhile and you're growing, that's a good sign. And number two is you can actually develop some of those product skills that you may have a gap in, right? Yep. So read these job descriptions. What are your gaps? And then go build a product that potentially fills those gaps, right? If you want to break into product, like a marketplace product role, there's so many no code app tools out there. Go build a marketplace app and figure out what are some of the problems, the chicken egg problem. Like, go figure out what are some of the things that you're going to have to deal with as a marketplace PM. And, you know, you can start to understand those concepts and understand the skills needed to be successful in that type of role. Okay. So that's why I say build products. And then the number three thing, and this is going to bleed into the second part of your question, is what are the things that companies can do, is to get really good at interviewing. Unfortunately, interviews are more of a game than they are, I don't know the best word here, than they are like a legitimate way of evaluating people, right? Yeah. Especially at the FANG level, people who are the best at interviewing are the ones who often get hired. And that's just the game. It sucks. You might be a really good, really, really high potential product manager, but you will lose that job position to a person who has put 40, 50 hours of prep into being a good interviewer and giving potential hiring managers the perception that they would be a good product manager, right? I'm just telling you how it is. This is the way things work, right? So my advice to people is worry about being a badass product manager once you get the job. Right now, worry about being a great interviewer, right? Because that's the thing that will get you there. Yeah. So, yeah. So now that transitions us into your second question, which is how do we fix these interviews, right? Because now you're rewarding people who are, you know, gaming the system. You're rewarding people who are good at interviews versus people who were identifying people who would truly be the best fit for the role.
Yeah.
Agree?
Yep.
Okay. So I don't know where to go from here, but I have a potential structure for you, and you tell me how this sounds, right? We can talk about, you know, obviously we talked about the system level. There's people in this forgotten pocket and it's hard for them to break in. But I think part of that problem is there's after you do get an interview, there's problems with the way product interviews are done today. And, you know, maybe we riff on ideas on how we would do it if we were, you know, the VP head of product somewhere. And I'd be happy to do that. I have a couple of ideas. I'm not going to say I got it all figured out. But right now I can at least explain some of the problems I've seen or heard of from people with the way interviews are done today. And then we can transition and talk about how would we fix those problems if we were, you know, in a position to do so?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So very quickly, some of the problems I see with the individual like product management interview is there's too much variation across the board. And maybe this is true for every role, but you have FANG type interviews, which are very different from startup interviews, which are very different from just, you know, mid-sized normal company that's been around a while interviews.
Yep.
And so you have to be aware of those things going in, right? Like what works for a FANG company is not going to work for a startup and vice versa, right? So we have to figure out, you know, a way around that, and we can maybe solution on that. I think the second thing is to, what's the typical experience, right? On average, if you take big company, small company, FANG, startup, normal PM, maybe PO, what's the average, right? I think the average interview, at least that I've heard of, goes something like this. you have a job rec posted to the internet. You have a ton of people apply. On average, I want to say there's probably 100 applicants per PM role on the internet. Okay. So you have this overload, an influx of people applying to the job, which makes it difficult for the recruiter or somebody to suss out who are the real potential candidates here and who are not. Once you do that, you go a step further in the qualification process. You have a call with the recruiter. They mm-hmm. want to make sure, A, you're a real person. B, you know how to talk. C, you're a decent fit for the role. Okay. Then they'll set you up with a hiring manager. All right, you have like an interview with the hiring manager, and they're simply trying to assess your fit from their role, from their point of view, because the recruiter most likely doesn't have a lot of product knowledge, so they can only do so much on that call, right?
Right.
So the hiring manager is really trying to, investigate your product knowledge. Okay, then that hiring manager might send you home with a take-home assignment. Yeah, this take-home assignment, and that take-home assignment is going to vary greatly. It could be like, hey, prioritize our sprint, or it could be, hey, what's a product you've built in the past? Or hey, you're a PM at, you know, X company, you know, launch a new product.
Yeah.
Right. It can be very detailed. And then from the take-home assignment, you bring that back and you present that to people either individually, the hiring manager, or a group of people. And then after that group interview, potentially you have a call with the VP or an executive. So pretty long process, right? And not easy, very time intensive, very, I would say intellectually intensive. And I would say even emotionally, right? This is like your time to shine. So you always have to be on with these things. Yep. So that's the typical process. And, I would say it's pretty difficult, right? Like there's a ton of companies out there now who know that process and are selling, you know, expensive packages to master these interview techniques and processes, right? And there's a place for those things. Now that I think that probably feeds the problem of people just being good at interviewing versus, you know, actually having high propensity in the job.
Right.
Okay. How are we doing? Are we hitting the subject here?
I think so. We're laying a good foundation for if individuals listening have not experienced this yet, this is what you will experience when you go through the process.
Until something changes. And that's kind of the transition into, all right, what would we change about that process?
Yeah.
So I'm happy to share a few ideas for that could potentially fix the systematic problem we have, like barring the forgotten pocket out, but also could change the individual interview process to be less intense. Like I've heard of people doing 8 interviews before. That's just too much.
It's crazy. Like
less intense, but still giving the company a good idea and understanding of how this person's going to work in the role.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to hear your ideas for how we start fixing this problem.
Yeah. All right. So let's put our product management hat on, right? Like how we fix these problems. Okay. So to do that, you'd have to look at the user journey, which we just did. Now we want to look at the other side of that journey, which is the company. So the company needs to be asking themselves this question: what are we looking for? What are the skills we want to see in the person we hope to hire?
Yeah.
Right. So you probably know this, like maybe you can add to my list, but off the top of my head, communication. We want to know that this person has good written communication and can talk to a team, because you're going to have to pitch some vision.
Yep.
AKA, you're also going to need visionary like type skills. You're going to need some problem discovery, customer, you know, handling enterprise or maybe not enterprise, but handling customer type skills. Yep. You're going to need some ability to manage stakeholders through influence. You're going to need to display product sense or strategy type skills. And another one is probably like data, like fluency with data, the ability to understand data sets and make decisions from that data, and back up your decisions with data, right? Yep. So what else would you add? I mean, those are the types of skills companies are looking for. What else?
Yeah, I think you covered most of the things. I would say, how do you make prioritization decisions? Like, what are the things that you care about that go into it?
Yep.
And then it goes into written communication, but like, what is the artifact that comes out of that discovery and prioritization? Typically, it's a user story or an epic or something that kind of articulates what a potential solution might be.
Right.
And then maybe this bleeds into UX, but I think product managers should have the skill of solution testing and validation.
Yeah. Yeah. Validating ideas, experimentation, right? I think that's kind of what you're getting at. Yeah.
Yep.
How do you take an idea and decide, you know, through an experiment, which path you should go down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great ads. Okay. So these are the things you're looking for in somebody. Okay. Really hard to get that if all you're looking at and evaluating someone on is their resume. Number one, the biggest problem I have with resumes is you could hire somebody to write your resume for you. So, you know, in a world where everybody can just have their resume written for them, how do you know what to trust? Like, yeah, you might see the words product manager on the resume, but just because it's there doesn't mean they were, you know, they did the job well, right?
Yeah.
And you might not see the words product management on the or product manager on the resume, and that doesn't mean they should be barred from getting into the process because they might do the job better than the person who has the experience.
Dude, that is my biggest pet peeve, honestly, because everyone has gotten a shot one way or another for some reason, and no one knows the reason why. But yeah. They spend a year or 2 years of being average or underperforming. And at some point they move on, you know, willingly or because they had to. And now you have 2 years of experience. So you're more marketable because you had 2 years of experience, but it does not have any indication of how good you were at the job. So exactly. that is my one rant I will have for the day.
Yeah, no, it's a great rant and it is totally merited. What I would say is, okay, so how do we fix that? Right. Yep. Okay. There's this trend in it's actually a lot of Web3 companies do this, I believe, where, and maybe not for product management, but for developers, they put up a problem on a public space and they invite anyone in the world to come solve that problem. And you get, you know, whatever, you might get something to your crypto wallet. You might get some sort of payment or something, but you may also get a call from a hiring manager, right? So if we apply a similar principle here, I think what would really help is to qualify these leads without a recruiter.
Yep.
A, the recruiter is swamped. There's way too many people applying to a job who are underqualified. B, the recruiter doesn't always know exactly what to look for with a product manager.
Yep.
So if we could almost remove that person from the equation in some way or form. I love recruiters. Don't get me wrong. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay. You're pulling at my heartstrings, man. That's why I'm laughing.
If you could almost save that expense or spend it elsewhere, then what you could potentially do is this. You could have like a form, right, that has your not only your wish list, but your demand list for what this person should be, the type of experience they should have. And I'm not talking about years of experience. We just talked about that.
Yeah.
Like the form shouldn't say you have 2 years of product management experience. No. It should say you solve these types of problems and have these types of skills that you can back up.
Right? Yep.
Okay. So you want to remove people from the equation who would otherwise be lying on that form, right? So only people who fit the qualifications that you outline. Then to get past, you know, to get somebody to actually look at your form, I'd like to receive a little bit of value, the way you think. And this is where we steal from the Web3 companies. Put a problem out there that is not extremely time intensive, but allows you to get an understanding for how somebody may come into your company and solve a problem. If an aspiring product manager fills out that form and solves that problem, then they're extremely interested in the role, right? Because they're putting some effort in up over and beyond just clicking the easy apply button. That's why there's so many applications. So, you know, get people who are highly qualified and, you know, decent potential fits for the role. From there, then it starts to look like, okay, the first call is this: have a call with the hiring manager to talk about your submission,
mm-hmm.
experience, and how you thought about solving that problem. I am actually a fan of take-home assignments. I'm not a fan of take-home assignments that are ridiculous, like 20 hours of work, you know, things that are totally unrelated to the job or the company. You know, we could go into a sidebar conversation about this, but
yeah,
okay. Easily. But I would say choose a take-home assignment that is, you know, directly applicable to the role, that allows you to get a peek into this person's skills, the ones we outlined before, right? Communication, written and verbal, problem discovery, prioritization, managing stakeholders, product sense, data fluency, strategy, all that stuff. That's what we're after in the take-home assignment. When that person submits the take-home assignment, you can get a pretty good feel for how well they are, they do at, you know, written communication, because if you give them like a deadline of a week, then you know they're not, you know, going and finding some document on the internet or having somebody else write it for them. It's original thought, right? Because if they can come into a meeting and back up these thoughts that they've submitted in the written document, then you know it's legit.
Yeah.
Okay. And then from there, it's just, are they a culture fit? And maybe you want to have a VP executive type interview or not, but you can pretty much tell if somebody's going to be a culture fit based off of all the above. Three steps with a high intensely qualification process at the beginning, I think would, you know, allow more people in from this systematic perspective and simplify the interview level process as well. I don't know. That's just my original take at how I'd solve the problem.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I could foresee questions of like, hey, when you get 100 of these practical submissions, how do you prioritize your time of going through them? And yeah. I think there are potential ways to do that. Like you could democratize that through like PMs who are at the IC level, who are interested in leadership, like how good of a job do they do vetting these projects? And like, they could like rate them or rank them. And give like an incentive, right? If you can show that you're good at like assessing talent, then maybe that's like one ding towards your track to leadership kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. So use people who are already work at the company who know a thing or two about product management,
yep,
and give them a chance to have an in on this process. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, it's good.
So no, I love your idea because it should be more tangible and objective than this like subjective thing of, oh, this person has 30 recommendations because they paid someone to write it or begged people to write it, or 100 people said they have this skill on LinkedIn, or they have 3 years of experience, which actually means nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not all experience is equal, right? Like,
absolutely.
So, you know, I'm a huge fan of the take-home assignment where, you know, if more companies did this, I think it would be great, where the question is essentially, walk me through how you took something from idea or concept to launch. Because obviously people who with product experience can answer that question, and they're going to touch all the pieces like problem discovery, how they prioritize, maybe some experiments they went through, how they took it to market, who all they worked with. And you can ask, you know, channel questions on each one, right? You can go off on tangents and ask extra questions during that interview.
Yeah.
The reason I like it is because you can use that same presentation for any interview you have, right? And so it's reusable. You're not having to pump extra hours into every single interview that you're doing as a product manager. And it also, you know, doesn't bar people out who don't have product manager experience, because they can very easily find other places in their career where they've taken something from idea to launch. Doesn't necessarily have to be a product. It could be a process. It could be, you know, fit that and mold that how you will. But what's important is how you think, how you present it, and how you would do as a product manager in that company. So I'm a huge fan of that take-home assignment, that question.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And to your advice earlier about aspiring PM should go out and build a product, there's no code tools. You could even do like a website, or like a landing page thing, kind of like Dropbox did when they were trying to prove demand for their product, like a painted door test kind of thing. You could do a podcast, you could do a YouTube channel. I mean, there's analytics behind all these things where you can like take data, make a hypothesis, make a change, see the results. Like you could run through a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
But then in those interviews, you can be like, okay, well, what was the idea for this? Or what was the problem you were trying to solve for this? And how did you take it 0 to 1? If it's like a 0 to 1 type of role that you're applying for, or if it's not, and you're like a feature PM, it's like, well, okay, I can take it into a smaller example. And like, how did I identify the problem within the product that kind of birthed this solution to the problem kind of thing? And so now you're equipped to answer different types of questions in different ways based on the role you're going for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool, well, I did a lot of talking. Do you have would you have any ideas in terms of what you would you know, how you would change the existing product management interviews and what you would do?
Yeah, and this is something that like I eventually want to productize, and if somebody hears it and steals it, like I don't care, it just needs to happen.
Okay.
But I like one of the problems with the interview process is like the shotgun effect, right? Everyone gets advice of apply to a bunch of companies, eventually you'll get called.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how do companies know who actually wants to work for them versus just wants to get a job?
Yeah.
So I would love to see a process where these same practical take-home assignments are offered to candidates you reject. The people that really want to work for your company will probably do it if they have some indication that they would be put kind of bumped up into priority for the next interview process for the next role.
Yeah.
Based on your practical assignment. And I think that would solve problems on both ends of the spectrum of how do I get prioritized or priority opportunities for the job that I really want?
Yeah.
And then companies get candidates who really want to work for them.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So you might have to have like a minimum bar for how far they went in the interview, because obviously if you offer that opportunity to everybody who's applied, well, we're already too far down the path of everybody already has already shotgun applied. So maybe it should be people who made it to the final round but didn't get it, or the round before that but didn't get it. So you know they're highly interested in the role, or they were at some point in their career. Yeah. And then, yeah, give them the opportunity to come back to it. I love that idea. That's a great one.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. And, boomerang. So we'll call it.
I like it. Let's go do it.
I'm game.
Cool, man. This has been like a super fun conversation. It's something I literally could talk about for hours and hours per day. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing kind of your perspective, your experience, and what you're hearing, and even ideas of what you would do about it. Cause I'm trying to do stuff. I know other people that I'm have formed relationships with are trying to figure out how to solve this problem too. And like, I don't see it as competitive at all. I see it as like, let's all just go like try a bunch of stuff and figure out what's going to work, and let's go change the problems that we see in the industry. So
yeah. Yeah. That's product management in a nutshell.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. Really enjoyed the conversation, and definitely be subscribing from here on out.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure you like and subscribe if you're watching on the YouTube channel. If you're watching or if you're listening on the podcast, make sure that you rate and review and subscribe or follow if you haven't already. And thanks for joining me this week, and we'll see you next week for another lesson in product management.